back.
Oh, we're back.
We're back to the Soft Shoulder Podcast. I'm Alex Motown Philly Curry.
Oh, I'm Stacy, but I'm not Motown Philly, unfortunately. I wish I was.
The reason we're talking about Philly is today we're going to do Hall & Oates.
That opening did make it seem like we were going to go all Motown Philly back again, but we're not talking about Boyz II Men.
We are not, but this week. We will learn that pretty close.
Close.
To tell the truth.
Yeah, close. Like proto Boyz II Men.
Proto Boyz II Men. Actually, they could have been contemporaries.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. At some point.
Yeah.
First thing I'm going to say about Hall & Oates is that they have never gone under the name Hall & Oates.
What?
Ever.
Huh?
Yeah. Every single album is Daryl Hall, no and, John Oates.
We're just making shit up here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh.
So everybody knows them as Hall & Oates. Mm. But yeah, they've never done it. They've always said that they want to be two separate songwriters and two separate entities.
Hmm. Yeah. Unlike Chicago.
Unlike Chicago. It's kind of... You know, Daryl Hall is most of the band, to tell the truth, or at least what people know of Hall & Oates. He's the main singer. But, like, Oates is... He's carrying it. He's great.
I love Oates.
Me too. Big Oates fan.
Tiny, tiny little man.
Tiny little man. Giant mustache.
Yes. Love it.
So we'll start off with Daryl Hall. He's from Pottstown, Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. No, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. North of Philadelphia. And speaking of Boyz II Men, he grew up doing street corner a cappella music.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. So think Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
Basically, he went into Philly and just went up to random groups of people and just started singing with them.
Oh my God. I wish that... Does that still happen? That's so cute.
I don't know.
Like, you could just be like, hey guys, can I join in? Like, every street corner is a glee club.
Exactly. Like... It'd be amazing. But just picture, like, Daryl Hall, especially, like, probably, like, at this point, like, 16-year-old Daryl Hall.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, no beating around the bush, that was a predominantly black pastime.
Absolutely.
But yeah, he said he had no problems. He was, just welcomed in.
Aww.
And everything was great. Mm. You'll learn a lot about that with Hall & Oates, where things just kind of worked out.
Life is easy.
Yes, life is easy when you're Daryl Hall singing on the street corner. But to be fair, he said that he grew up in a pretty like integrated neighborhood. And his parents were just open-minded people, especially for the late 60s.
Oh, so that's great.
Yeah, everything was good for Daryl Hall.
Great. Glad to hear it.
He learned harmony from his parents. Both of his parents were very heavily into gospel and R&B. His mom was in a band. I was not able to find any recordings.
Oh, I love mom bands.
I know. She was also a vocal teacher and a piano teacher.
Yeah.
So Daryl Hall kind of had it going on.
He got it started early.
Exactly, yeah. He basically took piano lessons his whole life, and he picked up the guitar in his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was going good. He went to Temple University, in Pennsylvania, and he went there to study music. So everything's fine for Daryl Hall.
Right on track.
Yeah. He quit 5 weeks before he graduated. And over this time he played in a bar band the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty successful bar band. Everything went really well for him. He is a really good singer.
He's a great singer.
He's a fantastic singer. So, I mean, there was, you know, I'm sure he put in the work.
Yeah.
But he was in the right place at the right time
in
many situations. He decided when he dropped out that he wanted to be just like a full-time musician instead of like make his way into being like a music teacher.
Right.
Which is what he would have got from Temple at that time.
Right.
At this point, he started hanging out with Tommy Bell. Who was a producer for the Stylistics and the Delphonics.
Oh, I love the Delphonics.
Yeah, Delphonics.
We have to do a Delphonics episode.
I will definitely do a Delphonics episode.
Oh, yes.
100%. And he kind of took Daryl under his wing. So he would take Daryl into the studio where he was getting to meet all these like studio musicians. So again, Daryl Hall just roaming around, singing really well, playing piano really well, and just making connections constantly. At this point, he was in a bar band called the Temp Tones. after Temple University.
Cute.
Super cute. They had a song that charted called Girl, I Love You.
Oh.
So also super cute. And the reason it charted is because his band won a talent show.
Like a battle of bands?
Kind of, yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure at Temple University it was called a talent show.
Yeah. No winners, no losers.
And at that talent show, which he won, he played with James Brown's band.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like James Brown's band was the house band at the Uptown Theater where this was. So basically you just went in, played with James Brown's band, and they're like, yeah, you got this. Like, here you go, Daryl Hall.
Oh my god, doors just swinging wide open.
Wide open for Daryl Hall. The prize was recording a song with Gamble and Huff.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So who basically created like the sound of Philly.
Right.
Yeah. So everything's going great. For Daryl Hall, the song Girl, I Love You is charting locally. Okay, let's go into Oates for a second.
Oh.
Oates, also doing great.
Yeah.
He was in a band called The Masters, which he fronted.
Oh.
They were like a doo-wop band. And then it turns out that Oates' band, The Masters, were on the same label as the Temptones.
Oh.
They didn't know each other at all.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. As with smaller record labels, there was an industry night.
Yeah.
Where the Temptones and the Masters were both playing that night as a showcase. And as Daryl Hall put it, in typical Philadelphia style, a gang fight erupted. And I have a quote here. They were whipping chains out, etc. Typical Philly.
Okay, so fighting chains, that's what they're doing
that's
in Philly?
That's what Philly is. That's typical Philly, though.
So wait, okay. So wait, the Temptones and the Masters were at a show. It was some kind of show.
At some sort of an industry night, essentially.
Okay, and there was also a significant gang presence.
Apparently.
Are we in West Side Story? Like, what is this?
We're in West Side Philly.
Ah!
If we're to believe anything from the intro to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air,
uh-huh.
West Philly was rough.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
So yeah, gang fight, chains.
Mm-hmm.
This is all adding up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hall and Oates were children at this point, essentially, mm-hmm. So they were not about that gang fight life. And they just, like, both ran. And then...
Well, when chains get broken out, I mean, I'm going to run, too.
Of course. I mean, it's typical Philly.
Yeah.
So they just ran into, like, this service elevator.
Uh-huh.
Both of them were like, we are getting out of here.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, hey, nice to meet you, man. Why are you here? And that's how Hall & Oates met.
That's their meet cute.
They got to know each other a little bit over time, and then Oates became Hall's roommate.
Oh.
Yeah. So they just, like, lived together for, like, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They both played in their respective bands. Oates went to New York. He went to Europe at one point. Hall was basically just kicking around Philly just as a session musician.
Okay.
So he's just, like, honing his chops, meeting everybody.
Lots of work in Philly at that time.
Exactly. It was a big booming scene at that point.
Yeah.
Basically, Oates came back from I think it was Europe, and then moved back in. And then they said, well, we should probably just start playing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl Hall and John Oates was born at this point. They became a fixture at a place called World Control Headquarters, and they started getting a following.
World Control Headquarters.
Yes, I guess.
Is this a bar?
I don't know. I think it's... I'm assuming it's at least some sort of a venue of some sort.
A headquarters.
Yeah, exactly.
You might say.
Yeah, World Control Headquarters. At this point, they met Arif Martin. He produced Aretha Franklin. For Atlantic Records. He was interested in them. They were trying to get an album deal. They met Tommy Mottola in New York.
Yeah,
Arif took them to New York. Tommy had connections. They went to California and met with Earl McGrath of Atlantic Records and got signed to Atlantic.
Oh.
Yeah. And they got to play with, you know, whole new studio musicians. They were really excited. Their sound was a little all over the place at this point. Like, they were R&B. They were kind of poppy. They were really kind of, like, stripped down, like, almost soul.
Yeah.
A lot of doo-wop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it went okay, but a lot of people, especially, how do I describe this in the most sensitive way I can? They were too white for the black kids and too black for the white kids. It's essentially what happened.
Yeah.
Like, and at that point, radio stations were not segregated, but they were... there was an R&B chart and there was a pop chart and a rock chart. So, like, they weren't getting played on the R&B charts and they weren't getting... like, it just wasn't working out for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were just... it was confusing for everybody, essentially.
I'm confused.
Yeah, like, I don't...
are these not black men?
Exactly.
What are these white guys doing?
Exactly. It's like, what is this? Like, what... like, so this
stupid.
Exactly, yeah. Like, yeah. It was before the whole, like, movement of, like... which is also bullshit in its own right, the, like, blue-eyed soul movement.
Oh, I know, and I feel like that whole, like, I really, like, resent that phrase, like, same. Blue-eyed soul, what do you mean by that? Like, and, like, I feel like it's, like, super, it's one of those things that's super racist without realizing how racist it is.
For sure.
You know?
Like, I heard the term blue-eyed soul, like, 4 times in the little thing I watched, and then, like, even the one with the Doobie Brothers, like, Michael McDonald was... the guy with the blue-eyed soul. Like, same way. It was just like... mm.
Well, I don't like that.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they kind of struggled for their first, like, 3 albums. Like, their first album was called Hull Oats, which is great. Their second album, Abandoned Luncheonette.
Love
again,
it.
No hits. I forget what their third album
is. No hits, but there's so many great songs on it.
There is, and there's a little bit of a story behind
it. Oh, okay, great.
I think their third album is called War Babies.
Yes.
Yeah, which is also a great record.
Yeah.
It's good. So in 1975, they actually left Atlantic and went to RCA.
Mm.
And at that point, they had a really big hit with Sarah Smile.
And me forever, Sarah. Oh, won't you smile and laugh for me, Sarah?
Smile.
Won't you smile a while for me, Sarah? So that went really well. It was a top 5 on the R&B charts. It basically started getting a swell at the R&B and black stations,
mm-hmm.
and then started to cross over into white radio.
Okay.
So they were just a crossover success, which was, you know, typical for a lot of their career, to tell the truth, but not typical for the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very atypical for the time.
Right. Yeah.
And with that hit with Sarah Smile, Atlantic, who owned the rights to, oh my God, She's Gone.
Yeah.
Off of Abandoned Luncheonette.
Yes.
Re-release She's Gone, which became a hit.
A hit, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so everything was going really well for them at this point.
Yeah.
And they basically just kept releasing hits.
Yeah.
They just didn't stop after this. There was a couple hiccups, but for the most part, like, Hall & Oates have had a pretty steady career of hits.
And that that album cover from the Silver album.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
the like... the almost like drag moment that they're having.
Yep.
I also thought that was pretty interesting because it was shot by Bill King. Yes.
Yes.
Who's a fashion photographer.
Yep.
And the styling, the makeup artist was Pierre LaRoche.
Yeah.
Who did a lot of Bowie's looks.
Yep.
His more like famous, like Ziggy Stardust, like the, and the Aladdin Sane one.
Yep.
Like, all those really iconic, like, David Bowie makeup moments that were so, like, drag at the time. That were so, like, you know, out there and kind of, like, not even, like, they always use the word androgynous, but, like, fully just, like, feminine looks.
Full on feminine, yeah.
Full on feminine looks, right? And even, like, some of the stuff with, like, Pierre LaRoche also worked with, like, Mick Jagger and, like, those, and people like that.
Didn't he do a lot of the work on Rocky Horror as well?
He did the Rocky Horror makeup, too.
Nice, okay.
So, and both, I think, in my research, there's not a lot you can find out about Pierre LaRoche. But obviously he was super influential in, like, the visual stuff of,
definitely.
Rock and roll. But both he and Bill King died of AIDS,
unfortunately. I heard that as well, yeah.
So... sad.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. But it was even at that point, like that record, the known to fans as the Silver record, it's mm-hmm. their self-titled, it's just Daryl Hall, John Oates. There was controversy around that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that just wasn't like, especially for a band that like had no history of this at all.
Right.
Of, you know, like, I think like Daryl Hall had a pretty brutal quote on it where he's like, just wanted to look like the girl that I wanted to date in high school, you know? It's like, mm.
We're like, I don't know if that really tracks.
Sure, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's questionable because it's like some of that history too. We have the understanding of like, you know, David Bowie as being really this like queer icon and really like having that presence as like, you know, someone who like sort of lives in that sort of fluid sexuality world. But then You have people that are like very obviously heterosexual, kind of like trying on this this way of like coding. Definitely. Right? So it does get into some sort of like interesting drag history. But, you know, I think it's like the ownership of drag also is an interesting question, maybe for another time.
Deal. Sarah Smile was about his wife, Sarah Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Really no crazy story about that. He just wrote it for her.
He just liked her.
Yeah. And She's Gone was written because Oates got stood up on New Year's Eve.
Oh, Oates, no!
And yeah, that was, I think, John Oates' first penned like hit.
I didn't realize he wrote it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, this is a John Oates appreciation podcast.
Yeah, I love John Oates. John Oates is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've told this to Stacey before, and I've told it to several people, but there was a website at one point that was called Just Oates. And they just took Daryl Hall out of Hall & Oates tracks, and it was great.
It's just a bunch of, ooh!
It was fantastic, and a lot of, like, just like, ooh! It was awesome. I liked it.
Yeah.
They had a little bit of a hiccup at this point because, like we were saying before, disco just took over the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
There was just, they weren't a disco band. They tried to put out some, like, more dancey tracks.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, like, full-on disco. So, like, they did okay. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? But by no means, like, like, they were successful. It just wasn't, like, the monster Hall & Oates that we know.
Right.
The, best-selling duo in rock history.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitive.
Yeah, by the RIAA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they beat out the Everly Brothers, and there was another really big one that I can't remember.
Duo.
I can't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. They had 6 number one hits over their career.
Mm-hmm.
They had Rich Girl. Mm-hmm. Which was in that kind of like dip period, you know, like in the disco period.
Mm-hmm.
Kisses on My List, Private Eyes, I Can't Go For That, Man Eater, and Out of Touch.
Uh-huh.
They had 34 chart hits.
Whoa.
7 platinum albums and 6 gold albums.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like very, you know.
It's respectable.
Yeah. Yeah. They did. They did. Fantastic. So after that like dip that they had before they started just becoming a monster hit machine. In 77, RCA was like, okay, Hall & Oates isn't working right now. Let's just push Hall.
Oh.
So.
No, Oates.
I know, right? So this is something that I'm really into. Daryl Hall put out an album in 77 called Sacred Songs.
Oh, boy.
That was produced and recorded by Robert Fripp. It was supposed to be the debut of like this weird trilogy that Fripp was going to put out.
What would the trilogy be?
The trilogy was going to be Sacred Songs first, uh-huh, by Daryl, yes, Hall. The second album was going to be Peter Gabriel's second album. The album second album.
Oh.
And the third was Fripp's Exposure. So Fripp was all over all of this stuff. He's even like credited with a lot of the writing on a lot of those albums.
Oh.
Especially his own.
I mean, that makes sense. I'm not mad at Robert Fripp. That fucking Brian Eno Fripp number that No Pussyfoot in?
He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and this album, Sacred Songs, is wild. It's so good. There's a song on it called Babs on Babs that's like 8 minutes long and then goes into like this weird, like atmospheric Fripp out.
Yeah.
Like it's the only song that's not credit. Like Daryl Hall has no credit on that song.
It's just a Fripp number.
It's just a Fripp jam in the middle of this album.
Babs on Babs.
It's also, which I will put in our playlist, and I do have a...
Wait, that's my name. Stacey Babs on Babs Sproul.
Perfect. the whole album, it's loosely based on Crowley's concept of Thelema.
Of course it is.
Yeah,
of course.
At this time.
Yes.
Also, I went and listened to second album again, and it holds up.
Oh, it's good.
It's so good.
We're going to have a Collins v. Gabriel off.
That should be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Gabriel.
Done. I will take Phil Collins. So Hall turned this into RCA, and RCA's like, nah, dog. Like, no. We're not releasing this. What are you doing?
This is not his master's voice.
Yeah, they're just like, we are not releasing Sacred Songs. Sorry. So Fripp and Hall were livid. And just started giving out copies to radio stations on their own.
Oh my god,
yes. And again, RCA was like, nah, dog. He can't do that. We paid for that. Sorry. Yeah, there was just so much. They were just angry.
Right.
It was like their opus, you know what I mean?
Right.
It did eventually get released in 1980. Mm-hmm. Once Hall & Oates just became like the monster hit machine, it was like, oh, well, people will buy this regardless.
Everyone needs the deep cuts.
Exactly. And it did well. It did fine. Very strange album, to say the least.
Well, I can't wait to listen to it tonight to go to sleep.
Definitely. Listen to NYC NY. That's a crazy song. So after all this, Hall & Oates come back together and they just decided to start using their touring band as their full-time band.
Uh-huh.
So instead of just every time relying on new studio musicians, they took in I think they had the same band almost all through the 80s.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into members, but the most, the one that people recognize the most is G.E. Smith from G.E. Smith and the Saturday Night Live band from the 80s or 90s, I think. And at this point, also, they enlisted both Sarah and her sister Jana Allen.
Wait, Sarah of Sarah Smile
fame? Sarah of Sarah Smile. Sarah Allen. And her sister Jana is co-writers. And they were fantastic. They're very, both of them, strong co-writers.
Hmm.
Yeah. And they started producing themselves.
Oh.
Yeah, so they just really took the reins and really wanted to, just hone it in a little bit more.
Yeah.
And this is where everything just starts to get nuts for them.
Okay, great.
Yeah, this is like On Voices, Kiss Is On My List is on that. So mm-hmm. Huge song. They follow that up with, You Make My Dreams Come True.
Uh-huh.
People are going wild for Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
They followed Voices with Private Eyes, which is their biggest album.
It's a banger, too.
Every song is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's considered to be one of the best albums of the 1980s. I Can't Go for That is one of the few songs by a white act to actually go number one on the pop and R&B charts at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, they're like, everybody is loving Hall & Oates.
Also, that the 12-inch single, the extended jam single version of that, where it's just the intro is just 2 minutes of
Oh, for sure. For sure.
It's the best.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fantastic album.
I'm actually very surprised that they produced themselves, too. Like, now I'm super impressed with them. Because yeah, it's like...
Yeah, are great.
The production... like, it's another thing, like I feel like so much about, like, soft rock and yacht rock and everything. It's like, it is in the production. Like, everything that is great about this music is in the production. But there's so many interesting places where people take it. Like, just the ability, like, for me, like, Hall & Oates, it's like... just how much they like build it all up and then just like cut it, like just take everything out. And it's like, then like one single voice comes back in or like one thing, one element comes back in. It's like super Hall & Oates style.
No, they're fantastic.
Know?
And I mean, like they have like such a nice harmony together. Yeah. And so like, tight. I don't know if they were like the sole producers, but I know they had a lot more in the boards.
Yeah. So they were involved in it at least. Like they had a vision.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. The other cool thing about this time, and the reason why Hall & Oates were so huge is that they were both so charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a big-time MTV band.
Right.
Like, think us being Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Think, like, the way that Chris Murphy used to just drop in. Chris Murphy from Sloan used to just drop into MTV and they'd just be like, oh, what's up, Chris? I'm happy you're here.
I was just walking by.
Yeah, and that's what Hall & Oates were like.
Okay.
And Hall & Oates would also be, like, constantly doing commercials for them and bits and spots. And
right.
Guest stars, so like, you know, they were wildly, wildly popular.
They just liked being on camera.
For sure.
Yeah.
And like their videos were super silly. Yeah. And like, you know,
I love their videos.
Me too. Their videos are great.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it was, they were untouchable at this time. Mm-hmm. It was great. So then they put out H2O after Private Eyes. It has their biggest hit to date, which was Man Eater.
Whoa, here she comes.
I like when he comes out. Sorry, I can't even do it without laughing. At the very end when he goes, a woman is wild, woo! It's the best. It's like in the last like 10 seconds of the song. God. And when Oates comes in and it's like, whoa, here she comes. And then he goes, oh, watch out. Great.
I love those vocal lines too, where you just imagine them doing them, like recording them isolated, where it's just like listening to the song and then being like, oh, watch out.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and I also love them because they always sneak in those little things.
Yeah.
Like, even like the song, like Rich Girl. Like, that, the song Rich Girl ends on, you're a rich, rich bitch.
Yeah.
Which was like unheard of at the time.
Yeah, like, how?
Yeah, because, like, you know, he kind of got away with, like, it's a bitch, girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end, it's like, I think it's the last word in the song. And it's, like, fading, too. So I see what you did there, Dylan. I see what you did. also on that song is One-on-One.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so good.
Oh, yeah.
Which, in the article that I read, they said it was, like, a reference, like, they were trying to reference basketball and sex. I only got the sex part. Like, yeah, like, One-on-One, I want to play that game tonight, I guess. But, like, One-on-One so slow? Basketball? It's a slow game of basketball with my lady.
Just a slow, sensual game of basketball.
After this, they put out their... Oh, actually, they put out a hilarious Christmas single.
Oh, of course.
Where they both covered... Jingle Bell Rock, but like there was a video where Hall did the lead vocals and a video where Oates did the lead
vocals. A Jingle Bell Rock off.
Exactly. and then they released their first greatest hits album, Rock and Soul Part 1.
Oh, wow.
Which also had two new songs on it that also charted.
That's ballsy, isn't it?
Right?
A greatest hits with new stuff on it?
Right. So they released Say It Isn't So.
Oh, yeah.
And Adult Education, which I think is a brutal song.
I don't know that song. It doesn't sound good.
It's rough. It's basically just saying that the teenager in the song needs to learn from an adult.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's one of those ones where you're like, goo.
So it's like, oh, we're starting to cross. We're getting to that threshold of like just making garbage music.
Exactly. We're getting there.
We're approaching it.
After this, they put out a Big Bang Boom.
Oh,
Big
yeah.
Bam Boom.
Big
sorry.
Bam Boom.
Tons of money in this record. Mm-hmm. Like, there was just, they were using, like, some of the, two of the most expensive and experimental synthesizers at the time. They were using the Synclavier 2 and the Fairlight CMI. I was looking at them and I'm like, I don't even understand what these are. They look like VHS consoles and shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sure. They also started to go really into like the dance side of things.
Yeah.
So like the noted like dance producer Arthur Baker.
Oh.
He made dance remixes of all four of the singles.
Oh.
Yeah, so like club hits of like.
Like House?
Kinda, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like early House.
Early
like,
House, yeah.
Like 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they were just literally making so much money. Like, it was unbelievable what was happening to these two guys. Then they went on tour to support Big Bam Boom. They called the Live Through Tour. Mm-hmm. And it was sponsored by the Pontiac Fiero.
Wow.
Right?
What a time.
And at this time, Oates was allowed to drive Pontiac's race car in GT Pro races.
Oh my God, just like around?
No, like he was their driver.
What?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so it's like, and driving for Pontiac in this GT, whatever the hell, race.
How did he fit all that curly hair in the helmet?
And it was at this point when they were named the most successful duo in rock history. Yeah, so they were on top of the world.
Yep.
At this point.
Yeah.
And then to fulfill their contract at RCA, they only had one label left. They recorded Live at the Apollo, okay. Their first live album.
Yeah.
Actually, their first live album that got released. They tried one in like 78 or something.
No dice.
And they recorded it with David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks of The Temptations.
Oh.
Yeah. So really, really neat album. It's really well done. And you really get to see their like, well, their influences. Like,
right. The Philly Motown stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
It's really neat.
Yeah.
And like you get to realize like, just how great they are.
Yeah.
At this point, Hall had another solo album. It was called Three Hearts in the Happy Ending Machine.
I don't like that.
No, neither do I. And he had a hit with the song Dreamtime.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They're without a label at this point. They're just kind of kicking around. They're like two of the biggest stars in the world. They do like Live Aid.
Oh yeah.
They do We Are the World.
Yeah.
Oates is in the chorus, like the choral, like chorus. Is that right? The ensemble.
I don't know.
And Hall actually has like a solo part.
Oh.
Yeah. So I know.
I wonder how close Oates was standing to Bob Dylan in that.
I don't know. That will be our picture.
The Bob Dylan in the We Are the World where he just looks like he's in an alternate dimension.
Yeah, for sure. They just wheel him out to say something unintelligible.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're huge. They signed to Arista.
Mm-hmm.
Or Arista?
I don't know.
I think it's Arista. Anyways, they put an album called Ooh Yeah.
Ooh Yeah.
Ooh Yeah. And they have a top 10 hit with Everything Your Heart Desires.
I don't even think I know that song.
No. I mean, it's okay, I guess. And then they put out another album called Change of Season with Arista.
Okay.
And then they just kind of break up.
Oh.
Yeah, they said. Well, no, they said they wanted to go out on top.
Okay.
They didn't want to become like a legacy band,
like a Chicago.
Exactly. Granted, they did put out more albums.
They did.
They
because I've listened to some of them and they're not good.
No. So yeah, they're around. You know what I mean? Like they're doing their high profile stuff. Yeah, they just kind of stop.
Yeah.
And I read in an interview with Daryl Hall. He's just like, I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Fair enough.
So in 1993, Jana Allen, Sarah's sister and co-writer, she died of leukemia.
Oh, God.
It was really hard on the whole band.
Oh.
And in 2002, Hall actually broke up with Sarah Allen.
Yeah,
so they split, but apparently they are very good friends.
And she's still smiling?
I think so, as far as I know.
Thank God.
And in 2005, Hall got Lyme disease.
Oh, no.
They did one more album in 1997 called Marigold Sky, where that kind of sounded like the Hall & Oates you know.
Uh-huh.
Everything after is just straight up adult contemporary.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it's just...
And, like, not good adult contemporary.
No, no. Like just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. Oates put out like a couple things over the years, but like had never got to the levels that Hall did a couple times.
Yeah.
And that's really Hall and Oates.
That's it.
Yeah. But, Daryl Hall did really well for himself with the internet. And so did Hall and Oates in general. Like, mm-hmm. There was a lot of memes that started Hall and Oates, especially like around like 2010.
Yeah.
And it actually gave them a whole new resurgence.
They were like like in the neighborhood of like Rickrolling and stuff like
kinda,
that.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Even like a couple years ago, like Vine. There was like a popular Vine with like the first of is it Rich Girl? I can't remember. What I want.
Oh yeah. So like no, that's you're making my dreams come true.
That is, yeah.
I can't do it.
The candle. I've been waiting for your girl. Oh, I love them so much. So yeah, they had kind of a resurgence, and that was what made Daryl Hall, or gave him the idea, sorry, to start a web series called Live at Daryl's House.
Yeah.
Which is a huge success.
Yeah.
Basically, he just invites people over to just play at his house.
Yeah.
He plays their songs. He plays his songs. He's usually noodling on a guitar over their songs, mm-hmm. which is great.
Finally, content for dads on the internet.
Finally. I love it. And as a dad, I'm going to introduce you to our first game.
Yay!
So this is the first game of the Soft Shoulder podcast, and it's called Who's at Daryl's House?
Yay! I'm going to win.
So I have four clues.
Okay.
They are the, let's say, legal 17 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And you have to guess.
Who it is?
Who's at Daryl's house.
Okay. Wait, all of the clips are a different person who's at Daryl's house?
All clips are a different person at Daryl's house. Okay. So we're going to start with the first one.
Okay.
Here we go.
That's all I get?
That's all you get.
So that person singing
is at Daryl's house.
Oh God, who is that? Is it a Motown guy?
No, more contemporary.
Contemporary?
Yeah, I would say maybe 10 years ago.
Oh damn.
He was a judge on one of those like stupid singing shows at some point.
Oh, that fucker from Maroon 5?
Nope. Do you give up?
I give up.
It's CeeLo Green.
Oh God, I would have never guessed that.
All right.
He's trying too hard.
I love he's like, Randy, we're over time. So good. Okay.
Okay.
Let's do another.
Okay.
This song, I don't know because it won't say.
It's a letter cry. Tears fall down my green. Let her sing. If it eases all my pain.
That's Darius Rucker.
That's our boy Hootie.
It's old Hoots.
It's Hoots himself.
Hoots McGoots. I like how Hoots shows up to Daryl's house and plays his own fucking song.
Right? And not rude. Just let her cry.
I know.
All songs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're one for one.
Okay.
Third.
I need a drink and a quick decision. Now it's up to me. What will be? She's gone. Oh, I better learn how to face it. She's gone. Oh, I.
So that fucking Rob Thomas or something?
Hell yeah, it's Rob Thomas! Ding, 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 ding.
What? Rob Thomas? Like, who cares? Okay. So the only episode of Daryl's House that I've seen is the one with Chromio.
Which I didn't include because I knew that.
I know, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's dope. We're going to do the last one in just a second.
Okay. Brings a case of possession. I hear you say, gimme, gimme. The compulsion to count, the percentage of time spent between. Ew, who is that?
That's Wait. Oats.
That's Oats!
That's Oats on the vocals.
Why does he sound so pervy?
Well, the song is called Possession Obsession.
Okay, fair, fair.
So
I'm sorry, Oates, I still love you.
I was so heartbroken when I heard you. As far as Hall and Oates is concerned now, that's still happening live from Daryl's house. And Daryl Hall also has a show called... No, Daryl's Restoration Overhaul.
Oh.
Where he restores like century houses.
Sure.
I tried to watch some today and I couldn't find a clip.
Oh, what the heck?
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like, okay, cool.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I got.
So all right.
We can go into our soft focus.
Soft focus.
Which I guess we will start with you. What's your favorite Hall & Oates song?
Okay, so my top five Hall & Oates songs, I feel like mine are mostly like the hits. Mostly.
That's fair.
But I feel like I chose some interesting ones. So like two off of Private Eyes. Private Eyes, of course.
Yeah.
Because they're watching you, watching you, watching you.
Ooh.
and also like, how could you not choose? I can't go for that. Like, are you not alive?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, such a good song.
I can go for that.
No can do.
and okay, so then She's Gone from Abandoned Luncheonette.
Yep.
Banger. Then Gino, parentheses, the manager.
Yeah, that song is great.
From Silver Album?
Yeah, great album.
Gino, no, 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 no. Like, it's bonkers.
I know, it's an awesome song.
It's so good.
Great. It's
great. And also, like, it's just like, it's their, like, quintessential, like, we're rock stars and we have everything song. It's so dumb, but I love it.
Yeah, such a good song. I'm with you on that one.
And then Method of Modern Love from Big Bang Boom.
M-E-T-H-O-D-O-O-F-L-O-V-E. It's Method of Modern Love.
Yes.
Yeah, great song. Modern Love.
And that video? Do you remember that video?
Is that the video where they're, like, getting run over by steamrollers and shit?
Maybe. They're like... definitely on some kind of smoky rooftop.
Nope. Nope. Okay. Oh, that's,
And there's, like, a big moon behind them?
Yeah, no. I'm thinking of... I can't remember, but, like, they're playing, like, oversized instruments and shit.
Oh.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Those are my top fives. We got overlaps?
We do. We have overlaps with I Can't Go For That, for sure. She's Gone.
Such
a, and I think that's it, actually.
Because
I got Kisses on My List is on my list.
Oh!
Which is such a good song.
Yeah.
It's just cute.
It is cute.
I got Alone Too Long.
I don't feel like I know that song.
Oh, that song is so good. We'll play it here in a second. Yeah, I'll play you a little clip.
Okay. I know the time has come. Ooh, baby. We've been alone too long. You don't want to be lonely, baby. We've been alone too long. You don't want to be lonely. Yeah, that sounds like the Delphonics.
Right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And then the last one is Family Man.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song, man. It's got the riff from Hash Pipe. by Weezer. Out of nowhere, you just listen to the song and it's going dun 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 dun.
You're like, hey, this is Weezer.
It's actually a cover. It's a Mike Oldfield cover.
Oh,
yeah, Tubular Bells fame.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, oh super my gosh. Weird.
Yeah, it is super weird.
Yeah. And those are my top five.
Oh, love it.
And then we each picked a best Hall and a best Oates song.
Oh, I didn't do that. I thought we were doing bottom two.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to put Adult Education.
Okay, yeah.
I hate that song. And that's why.
But I also want to hear your top Hall and your top Oat.
Oh, it's definitely Sarah Smiling. She's Gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. That's it.
Yeah. Just a jam. And I just don't like Adult Education. What are your top?
My bottoms are, they're both from, you know when you're like looking for bad songs from an artist?
Yeah.
Usually look for an album that's like, if it's an artist that's like was popular in the 70s, you go and you're like, what are their early 2000s albums looking
for sure.
Like
is yours from Marigold Smile or whatever it's called?
No, there's an album called Do It For Love, I think.
Oh, this is the adult contemporary years.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a song called Miss DJ.
She drops the beat one time, the crowd just fall at her feet tonight. And I don't know how to fight.
It's real bad. I wrote down here, sounds like Avril Lavigne.
Perfect.
And then from the same album, Love in a Dangerous Time. Mostly just because I saw it and I was like, "Excuse me, the song is called Lovers in a Dangerous Time.
It's not a cover of that, is it?
No, it's not. No.
We've already had the Bare Naked Ladies destroy that town.
I know. Like, leave, like, everyone just leave Bruce Coburn alone.
We survive. Love in a dangerous time.
And on that, we will go out.
Okay, bye, love you.
Bye, guys. See you in 2 weeks.